It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You're all right.
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
Peace shattered in Portland as national attention turned to yet another ideological clash echoing in the streets.
USA, USA.
Saturday, right-wing extremists went head-to-head with left-wing anti-fascists in what has become a predictably ugly street duel. The conflict started when hundreds of right-wing protesters assembled for a rally on the city's waterfront. A show of force from some 700 police officers trying to keep the peace. This counter-protester says there's no place for it in Portland.
It is not free speech, it is hate speech, and we as the people of this city are not going to take it.
Former InfoWars staffer Joe Biggs organized the event as a show of force against the city's Antifa movement. He said it was meant to stir up the left, and it worked.
We came in, we just did a march peacefully. We went in, planted our flag, came back out, and they're chasing us right now.
Members of the city's Antifa chapter pushed back, leading to sporadic outbursts of violence.
Most of the protesting has been peaceful, but we do see these flare-ups in the crowd right now. You can see a crowd of counter-protesters. In the middle is what appears to be a right-wing protester, and they are doing all they can to push him out.
The president starting the day by labeling Antifa an organization of terror. We push them for a response to the protest.
We would love to hear your side.
There's no two sides. There's Nazi and not Nazi.
And with one right-wing group threatening monthly protest, the mayor of Portland responding.
I want to be very clear. We do not want him here in my city, period.
All right, so that's the report from, you might guess, NBC about the near riots in Portland. Some would say probably riots. If you saw the videos, it certainly looked like that. And it's these two clashing forces, Antifa, which has a huge contingency in Portland. I noticed that they were organizing online. And I thought to myself, I read it right here. They did an online call to followers to turn out to defend Portland from, you heard NBC saying over and over again, far-right protesters. So social media is not censoring anything Antifa does. And of course, they are being billed as the anti-fascists. They're against the Nazis. The Nazis, according to their narrative, are the far right. And that, of course, means President Trump and people that support him. Just as plainly as I could say it, that's what they mean. You can have to understand words don't mean what they mean. If anyone is fascist, taking over with violence, dressed in masks, beating people at rallies, innocent people, innocent bystanders, it's Antifa. I don't think there's any question about that. I saw so many videos of this just yesterday. I saw a white woman dressed like some sort of a, I don't know, princess, not in a long gown, but like, it's hard to explain, like a Nordic look. And she's trying to calm down a fellow Antifa protester, a black man who is wearing no shirt and he's very angry. It's all about being black to him. I don't know how much it is about being part of Antifa, but he's part of them. And he said some pretty horrible things, and she's trying to calm him down. And then you hear her say, I'm a doctor. I'm a doctor. I work with people. Now, no violence. Words can be violent, she's saying to him. It's amazing. She's sort of like circling him, trying to manage him. But it's bizarre. We know that they're violent. We know that Andy Ngo, who was a journalist for Quillette, was beaten and had brain injury from that. We plagued quite a bit of what happened to Andy, and the police did not intercede. That was in Portland. And Portland's Antifa actually has a name. It's Portland's Rose City Antifa. That's the nation's oldest active anti-fascist group. I don't know why. This is from Fox. Why do they buy into those terms? It's just not anti-fascist. It is fascist. And but Antifa says that violence against right-wing demonstrators is exactly what should happen when the far right attempts to invade our town. So I don't know. I wish I had someone in Portland to talk to us about how the people feel. But I don't know much about Proud Boys. I know something about them. Joe Biggs was the organizer. You heard him on that clip. Joe is actually married to a Guyanese woman. I mean, his wife is black. And he's one of the organizers of that, this white supremacist Joe Biggs. And Proud Boys, on their out of their words, this is what they say they are. They are for minimal government, maximum freedom, anti-political correctness, anti-drug war. They're for closed borders, anti-racial guilt, anti-racism, pro-free speech, pro-gun rights, glorifying the entrepreneur, venerating the housewife, reinstating a spirit of Western chauvinism. Okay, so that's what Proud Boys are. So I'm not endorsing them, nor am I criticizing them, because I'd have to know more about it. But I'm just telling you, that's who the opponents were in this clash. At one point, I saw members of Antifa, and I mean lots of them, chasing a man who was dressed like with these plastic warrior costumes that kids wear, the plastic armor and the mask. I think I bought something like that for my grandson. And he's with his, like a daughter. It looks like a daughter. She's young. She's probably 10 or 11 years old. And this group of Antifa, whatever they call them, fascists, I think I just should say what they are, chased this man and his daughter, apparently daughter, forever. I watched the video. It went on and on and on. It chased them around and chased and chased. It's just a little girl. And the father is pulling her by her hand, trying to get away from this crowd, and they're trying to attack the dad. It was really amazing. I saw a video of one man who had been knocked out. One thing that you forget is the police were not present. That's one of the things that I said and saw in many of these videos. No police around here. No police. And people were being attacked. So you tell me that Antifa is anti-fascist and they're, you know, the people, the group of the people. No, I just don't. It's sick. It's really sick. That's what happened in Portland. And Proud Boys is claiming victory in that instance. They are saying that they wanted attention to come to Antifa. They want to shut them down. And because the president actually then tweeted out that the U.S. might designate Antifa as a terrorist organization, they felt victorious. And that's a good reason. And it should happen. Ted Cruz has proposed legislation. And so we'll see what happens with that, because they really are out of control. They're not confined to Portland. We see them showing up. I think the first time I remember seeing them was in St. Louis in the Ferguson riots. And then there they were in D.C. after the inauguration, just wreaking havoc and not, you know, wearing these masks. When did they ever allow people on the streets to create violent situations wearing masks? As far as I can tell, that's against the law. I just don't understand why they continue to allow them to do that. So the president responded by saying that we need to declare Antifa a terrorist organization. On the other hand, there was a Democratic congresswoman who was on CNN, and this is what New Mexico Republican Deb Haaland had to say.
The U.S. doesn't have a domestic terrorism law, and no government agency designates domestic groups as being terrorist organizations. What's your reaction to that tweet?
So, this is on par with what the president does. He sides with the white supremacists. He sides with the white nationalists, with the domestic terrorists in our country, just as, you know, he's incited violence against people of color. Portland is a progressive city. They want to ensure that they keep their city moving forward. It's not surprising that Trump would side away from the folks who are the peaceful protesters working to safeguard their city from domestic terrorism. Just not surprised at all that the president sides with the white nationalists. That's been his mode of operation since before he was elected president.
All right, so that was a congresswoman from New Mexico, Democratic. And let me just kind of look at her words for a second. This is what the president does. He sides with white supremacists. Do you remember us talking recently over and over again? And I'll repeat again that when the left says white supremacy, they're not talking about the color of the skin. You think about what I just said. The organizer of that event is married to a woman from Ghana. She's not white. But he's a white supremacist. Why? How can that be? How can black conservatives be racist because they're called that? White supremacists? Why? How can they be called that? Because white supremacy to the left means the embracing of traditional American values, whether it's the Judeo-Christian ethic, whether it's the Constitution. And they call it white supremacism, but they're not talking about color. And so you have to kind of switch something in your brain to understand what's being said here. And then she goes on to refer to Antifa as peaceful protesters. Trump would side with away from the folks who are just peaceful protesters like Antifa, working to safeguard their city from domestic terrorism. And of course, he sides with white nationalists. So just keep those terms in mind as you listen to the news, and hopefully you can repeat it and tell people that you know what's actually happening here. So because people are going to be confused by the words, that's the game that they play, the very insidious, dangerous game that they play. Meanwhile, across the globe, more protests in Hong Kong. Let's listen to this report.
Defying a police ban and bad weather, Hong Kongers marched in peace, fueled by anger. Overflowing Victoria Park, the city's historic site for people power protests, they spilled into the streets, turning main roads into a sea of umbrellas.
Even with the rain torrential at times, it's not stopping all of these protesters from rallying. They are angry and they are committed to making their voices heard by the government.
What started out June 9th as a demand for the government to revoke a hated extradition bill has exploded into calls for greater democratic reform. The resignation of Hong Kong's chief executive, Carrie Lam, and a probe into police brutality. In the past week, they've been accused of excessive force, firing tear gas into a crowded subway station. And a protester could lose her eye after police allegedly shot a beanbag at her face, which they deny. Protesters have been accused of chaos too, crippling the world's eighth busiest airport over 2 days with mass sit-ins and detaining two Chinese citizens who they thought were spies. Sunday's march was a chance to step back from the violence.
Is it better to use violence or is it better to use peace?
I believe peace is the best way.
Basically, we should say it is peace.
I would prefer peace. It seems peaceful protest is not doing any good.
But rising violence has come with rising fear that China could deploy its military to quash these protests. Raimi Innocencio, CBS News, Hong Kong.
All right, CBS News doing a good job of covering that. And you have to know that, you know, Hong Kong, again, is a very prosperous place. It would be like, pretty much like walking down the streets of Chicago or New York, except a little bit more, less ethnically diverse probably, but clean business, incredible business, people employed and prosperous. What would cause people like that to do this? You have to know. I mean, you see the pictures. They are, if you could see this picture, it's amazing the amount of people in the street, given the fact that the Chinese were amassing, you know, tanks across the border, across the bay, really, on mainland China, threatening to attack them. And so we know that this is probably, there's more to this than we even know. I've been reporting on this as much as I could. The president finally weighed in on this, and I was really happy that he did. Actually, we will take a break and then come back in a second, because the whole business of trade and tariffs, potential tariffs against China, is in the forefront of the news. And I said to you last week, I think the president has not weighed in on Hong Kong because the trade or the negotiations with Hong Kong, with mainland China, have been so precarious. And because the demonstrators have been waving American flags and the Chinese communists have been blaming America for the uprising in Hong Kong. And so I think the president has probably wisely not weighed in on that, but he weighed in just a few days ago. I'm going to play it for you. Plus, we're going to talk about kind of an update on social media, since we talked quite a bit about it on Friday. There are some more developments. Oh, and just lots more things. So just stay tuned. Sandy Rios, by the way, good Monday. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
AFR.
It is a horrible scenario, but it happens. Dennis writes about his wife. She was diagnosed with leukemia. In fact, she's a two-time survivor. And in the midst of all that, they ran up over $1 million in medical bills. Thankfully, they're Medishare members. And Dennis says they are so thankful for that, how others came together to meet their needs. And that's how so many Medishare members feel. This is not health insurance. It's different. You don't have to pay for things you don't believe in. And like Dennis found out, it just works. So if you join Medishare, not only do you save a lot of money, the typical family saves about $500 a month, but you know where your money's going each month. You're helping people. And if the time should come, they'll be helping and even praying for you. So yes, it's different. And as more than 400,000 people now know, when it comes to healthcare costs, different is beautiful. Find out more. Call 833-44-BIBLE. That's 833-44-BIBLE. 833-44-BIBLE.
This is Pause to Pray, a chance each day to stop down from the daily noise of life and pray for our country's leaders.
Today, we pray for Gopal Khanna, director of the Agency for Healthcare Leadership and Quality. His agency focuses on improving healthcare services and access to care through research, evaluations, and the sharing of information. Proverbs 13:20 reminds us of the importance of keeping company with those who provide wisdom. Whoever walks with the wise becomes wise, but the companion of fools will suffer harm. Right now, with this in mind, let's pray together. Almighty God, we ask for wisdom and guidance for Gopal Khanna as he works to improve healthcare services in the United States. We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.
Pause to Pray is a service of this station and the Presidential Prayer Team, a nonprofit, nonpartisan ministry dedicated to encouraging prayer for our nation's leaders. To learn more, go to pausetopray.org.
Fox News Commentary with Todd Starnes.
When celebrity Christians give up the faith. That story next.
Truett McConnell University.
My name is Paul Kizito. I'm a junior biology major here at Truett McConnell, and I came from Uganda. What I love about TMU is number one is the heart of, you know, of just the school and the love for God, for Christ. You can see it once you step on the campus. Like, you can see it's best, like, the foundation for TMU is Christianity.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
I've noticed a disturbing trend among so-called Christian influencers. A small but growing number of people made famous because of their faith are now using those platforms to reject the teachings of Christ. Joshua Harris, the author of I Kissed Dating Goodbye, is perhaps the most notable, renouncing his faith and his religion. Franklin Graham said on my radio program that people who abandon the faith should be ashamed.
These are very young people, and I doubt whether they even had a very strong faith or if they even had a faith at all to begin with. For whatever reason, they have decided they're going to turn their back on God and God's standards. They're in a very dangerous place to be out from under God's protection.
Graham was especially upset because Harris had gone public and warned one day he will have to stand before God and give an account about his decision. I'm Todd Starnes.
That's your Fox News Commentary.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
How concerned are you about a violent crackdown by the Chinese in Hong Kong?
Well, I am concerned. I wouldn't want to see a violent crackdown. I put a little bit of a memo out last night. He's a man I like a lot. I get along with him very well, President Xi. And I said that I would be willing to bet that if he sat down with the protesters, a group of representative protesters, I'll bet he'd work it out in 15 minutes. I bet he'd work it out very quickly. I know it's not the kind of thing he does, but I think it wouldn't be a bad idea. I really believe if he sat down, they have a certain little leadership pool. If he sat down with that leadership pool, I'll bet he'd work something out very quickly. It really seems like things that could be worked out pretty easily. I really would like to see China in a humane way solve the problem in Hong Kong. Humanely solve the problem in Hong Kong. And I think they could do it very quickly. You know, I said yesterday, I really have a lot of confidence in President Xi. I know that if he sat down with their representatives, I have no doubt he would solve that problem quickly.
All right, that's the president weighing in on Hong Kong, doing it very carefully. And I think actually very smartly, honestly, because if he were to come down publicly in a very powerful way against China and these riots in Hong Kong, it would backfire. Because the way the Eastern mind works, it's like saving face. That's the worst thing you can do, is cause someone to lose face or to lose their pride or to make them publicly back down. And so you can't, you just, in dealing with Eastern countries and also Muslim countries, it's, you can't, you have to do a lot of things in a different way than the West does. We are just more direct. And, you know, President Trump is the, is the quintessential Westerner. So he's pretty blunt, but I think he's being careful about this, and I'm glad he is. And so as we watch and wait to see what's happening with the people of Hong Kong, really China, because their economy is contracting, and they are in trouble. In fact, President Trump is saying that China is asking for a deal to be made. I'll read this to you. He is saying that the economy is struggling because of the tariffs. Of course it's struggling because of the tariffs. Everyone, every business person I've talked to or heard on television discuss it has repeated that that China's economy is shrinking. Gordon Chang, our guest, frequent guest, has made that claim for a while, and it's shrinking more. Remember, we said that they're devaluing their currency, which means that their own people are making far less money for the goods and services they're producing. They can do that to their people because they're a communist country. We can't do that here. We have a free society, and people, you know, farmers and consumers and makers of products like Tim Cook at Apple, who put a word in the president's ear about the rising cost of making Apple because apples, whatever, various forms, computers, et cetera, phones, they have a lot of their work outsourced to China. And that because Samsung is their number one competitor, Samsung gets their work done in Korea. And the tariffs are not affecting Samsung, but they're going to affect Apple. And so he's asking, Tim Cook is asking for the president's intercession, and the president claims he's listening. My point is this, that we live in a very different place where the markets are allowed to be free, and we have to consider our people when we raise and lower tariffs or prices or do anything to the economy that causes a pain to the people that live in this country. But Chinese don't care. They don't care. And so their people have been absorbing the tariffs that have been put in place. Businesses are contracting. Businesses are leaving. Apple should leave, for heaven's sake. I heard that they are going to bring a lot of businesses back to this country, a lot of business. And thank goodness for that. That's been the problem. Oh, man, that reminds me of a statement made by Peter Navarro. I think I have it. This is Peter Navarro, clip 8. He's on ABC This Week. Yes, this is the one. Let's listen.
Let me tell you what, as I'm sure you're well aware, the Wall Street Journal editorial board this month dubbed this the Navarro Recession, and they wrote a second editorial this week called the Navarro Recession 2, saying Mr. Navarro and President Trump spent Wednesday blaming the Federal Reserve for the market meltdown, and we suppose any scapegoat will do in a storm. We've been warning for 2 years that trade wars have economic consequences, but the wizards of protectionism told Mr. Trump not to worry. The key to avoiding the worst is to restore a sense of policy, calm, and confidence. And I would add to that, businesses are not blaming the Federal Reserve. For example, the National Retail Federation explicitly said uncertainty for business and the new tariffs will result in higher costs for consumers and slow the U.S. economy. So clearly not everyone agrees with you.
So let's start with the Wall Street Journal. When the Main Street Journal starts attacking this administration, that is when we worry. The question for the Wall Street Journal is, where was the Wall Street Journal beginning in 2001 when China got into the World Trade Organization, and we watched the exodus of over 70,000 of our factories, over 5 million manufacturing jobs? Why isn't the Wall Street Journal been editorializing over the last 10 years about China's hacking our computers to steal trade secrets, about stealing our intellectual property, about forcing the technology transfer from our companies, about the currency manipulation that occurred for over a decade? So the Wall Street Journal, look,
We don't have a trade deal, though.
It's called the Wall Street Journal for a reason, okay? It represents Wall Street. And the Wall Street Journal never saw an American job it didn't want to offshore.
Well, let's talk about...
Yay, Peter Navarro. You know, I have to say, as I've many times said, and I don't ever want it to be misunderstood, I don't consider myself an economist, but I do follow things, and I do have some common sense. And when this was happening in the early 2000s, and even started with the Bush administration, I thought, this is not right. I used to get in, I've gotten into arguments with business friends of mine who are in business, successful. Oh no, free trade. Free trade was like almost the 11th commandment. And as we saw, you know, jobs being drained, manufacturing going offshore, you know, cars being built in Mexico, and it was just amazing. And American jobs lost. And no, free trade. And because they were making money hand over fist. And that's when the Republican Party really gravitated to its, it has in the last decade since Reagan not been really the party of the wealthy as it was before that time. But certainly the consideration of super wealthy persons sometimes by leadership of the Republican Party overtakes the interests of the people. There's no question about that. And Wall Street does represent that. Now, look, I want to do a caveat on that because I watch the Wall Street Journal report every Sunday afternoon, and I really enjoy it. And I think they've got some great commentators. So that doesn't mean that everybody affiliated with them. Steve Moore, who's our frequent guest, used to be part of the Wall Street Journal editorial board. But by and large, the business interests, which often you see reflected in the opinions of Fox News editorial, is the big money interests. And so you just have to learn to be very discerning. Peter Navarro is spot on. He is spot on. The Wall Street Journal and certainly Democrats too. This is when we have a uniparty. Rich Democrats and rich Republicans feel the same about this. They're happy to let China have what they want as long as they can increase their coffers. And that is exactly what they've done. And that's why we're in the situation that we're in. And that's why President Trump is having to unring a bell, a very complicated bell. He's been talking about China since he ran. I can't even repeat how he says China, but that's been a theme of his, has it not? And now he's doing what's necessary. And it may be, let me repeat, it may be that you and I might have to pay more for things. We might have to buy less. We might not go to Walmart and fill up our baskets with stuff that we think we might like. Because it's not just Walmart. I'm overstating, oversimplifying. Chinese goods are everywhere. They're cheap and affordable. And so we have a lot of stuff. We might have to do with less stuff in order to have our fellow Americans have jobs that pay a wage that they can, you know, raise a family on. We might have to tighten our belts a little bit. And I think we need to shift gears and tweak our brains a little bit more to do that. We don't want to bankrupt and put our nation at risk so that we can have cheap things. We just don't, do we? I don't think so. There was a lot of conversation about, you know, the president has done very well in the economy and the American economy is booming. But of course, the president, that whole Russian collusion thing has kind of fallen apart. The left is now looking for another place, another center, another focus of destroying him. And I'll give you an example. It is orchestrated. If you don't believe it, listen to this montage. This was put together by Fox and Friends this morning, and we borrowed it from them. This is clip 9.
Recession jitters. President Trump said to be rattled as economic alarm bells cause a wild week on Wall Street.
There are indicators that the U.S. could be headed for a recession.
There are some rough waters ahead, maybe a recession.
Fears of a coming recession spiked on the heels of a key economic indicator, what's called an inverted yield curve.
The yield curve has inverted before every U.S. recession since 1955.
They say potential recession on the horizon.
Recession.
All right, so that's not by accident. Don't ever think. You know now, right? Because you're really savvy. We've kind of lost our innocence. I hope many Americans have lost their innocence when it comes to taking in news and taking it at face value. And so that's what they're going to be doing on the economy. Now, I want to, if I can find this quickly, because this is there was an interesting article that came out last week, and it is about this is what I wanted. There was an in-house meeting of the New York Times staff, which was, oddly enough, leaked. And so this is how it went. And the reason for this meeting was, will recall it last week, there was a headline in the New York Times, the beginning of last week, as I recall. And so the headline said, what was the headline? It was a favorable headline. Here we go. And it was this: Trump urges unity versus racism. That was the headline that the New York Times printed. Well, guess what? The Twitter universe exploded with, what are you talking about? How dare you say that? How dare you? You know, how dare you say that Trump urges unity? This is not, you know, this is not the this is not the political line. This is not the way we're supposed to characterize him. We're not supposed to give him credit. How, what are you doing? And so they altered their headline, and that caused quite a dust up. And I'm sure you remember that story. So they had a meeting as a result of that. So here you go. This is this is not the article I meant, but it'll work. The whole leaked transcript is very interesting, but this statement from the executive editor of the New York Times, Dean Baquet, is especially telling. This is it. Our readers who want Donald Trump to go away suddenly thought, holy blank, Bob Mueller is not going to do it. And Donald Trump got a little emboldened politically, I think, because, you know, for obvious reasons. And I think that that story has changed. A lot of stuff we're talking about started to emerge like 6 or 7 weeks ago. We're a little bit, tiny bit flat-footed. I mean, that's what happens when a story looks a certain way for 2 years, right? I think we've got to change. I mean, the vision for coverage for the next 2 years is what I talked about earlier. How do we cover a guy who makes these kind of remarks? How do we cover the world's reaction to them? How do we do that while continuing to cover his policies? How do we cover America? That's because it's so divided by Donald Trump. How do we grapple with all the stuff we're talking about? How do we write about race in a thoughtful way? Something we haven't done in a large way in a long time. That, to me, is vision for coverage. In other words, what he is saying, and I've got another article that talks about it in more detail. I'll find it in a minute. What they're trying to do, what he's saying, what the editor is saying to the, we're going to start calling him a racist. We're going to do it for 2 years. So the new line is not that Trump is colluding with Russia. It is that President Trump is a racist. And he kind of turns to them and says, now we have to regroup and shift resources and emphasis and then to take on a different story because that Russian thing didn't work so well. We had that narrative going for 2 years and everybody watched Mueller walk out of that room and they thought, holy blank, Bob Mueller is not going to do it. He's not going to take care of it. So now we have to think of something else to disparage and destroy President Trump on. So we're going to use race. And that's basically, that's exactly what, here we go. This is the article I was looking for. This is by Byron York. And by the way, we'll put it on our Facebook page. It's New York Times chief outlines coverage shift from Trump Russia to Trump racism. Okay, so the leak was leaked to Slate. This is interesting because Slate's a leftist organization. Byron speculates that they probably are concerned that the editor's not as far to the left as he needs to be, and that's why they leaked it. So, Baquet used the gentlest terms possible. The story changed, that's his words. But the fact is, the conspiracy coordination allegation the Times had devoted itself to pursuing turned out to be false. Beyond that, Democrats on Capitol Hill struggled to press an obstruction case against the president. The Trump-Russia hole came up dry. And so, Baquet also said, I think one of the reasons people have such a problem with a headline like this, the one that Trump urges unity versus racism, he goes, Baquet says, is because they care so much. And they depend on the New York Times. They are depending on us to keep kicking down the doors and getting through because they need that right now. It's a very scary time. Okay, so you get the point. I know you get the point. We'll post that article on our Facebook page so that you can share it and read it. I wanted to mention something else about China. My mind went off in that other direction, but this is important. President Trump finally weighed in on Huawei. You may remember that Huawei is the Chinese organization that's been a direct competitor to Qualcomm. And competitor, I know these are, we don't do business directly with these companies, but they are major companies overseeing our technological abilities. And the fight between Qualcomm and Huawei is over 5G. Most of you use 4G. 5G is the new innovation. Huawei wants to take over and dominate and have the contracts from U.S. companies and everyone on 5G. But what that means is we know that Huawei is directly connected to the Chinese military. And if they take control of 5G, then they will have complete control over accessing all information shared in America and worldwide. The president has been slow to come to at least publicly state that we're not going to deal with Huawei, but he finally did it. I may not play the clip, but you needed to know that. All right, Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
No advantage would be taken of us by Satan, for we are not ignorant of his schemes. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. A routine attempt to execute a search warrant in a narcotics investigation in Philadelphia became an 8-hour standoff with exchanged gunfire between police officers and the suspect, where 6 officers were shot and 2 others held hostage for 5 hours. As the live shooter situation continued, Kamala Harris was interviewed on CNN, where she trotted out her same old gun-grabbing ideas as a solution without knowing any facts about the situation. So we're supposed to believe a 6-time felon will all of a sudden abide by federal gun laws? Kamala, please.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Now just remember, people, 5 minutes ago, Joseph was in prison. You know, the climb to the top for Joseph was slow in terms of time, but he didn't have to go through many positions on the way up the ladder, did he? He went from clear to the bottom, clear to the top in one day.
Join Dr. David Jeremiah for his series, God Meant It for Good, next time on Turning Point.
5:30 a.m. and 7 p.m. Central on American Family Radio.
What happens when we don't feel close to God? Does that mean something is wrong with us or that God doesn't care? Ravi Zacharias explores the emotional connection we have in our Christian journey and what to do when those emotions aren't what we expect and how we should respond. That's this week on Let My People Think.
Sundays at 7 p.m. Central.
Brian Fisher here with today's Life and Liberty Minute. I am predicting today that Elizabeth Warren will be the Democrat nominee in 2020. The talking snake media has already anointed her. You never read or hear critical profiles of her on liberal sites. The other Democrat candidates have significant liabilities. Biden is a gaffe machine. Sanders is an unelectable socialist. Kamala Harris put people in prison, but Democrats want them all to be let out. Buttigieg has no support among blacks, but here is the clincher. Liz Warren is a woman. Democrats have been itching to put a woman in the White House, and it turns out that August 18, 2020, which falls right in the middle of the presidential election campaign, is the 100th anniversary of the passage of the 19th Amendment, which gave women the right to vote. Liz Warren will ride that wave until the election. Get ready for a Trump-Warren shootout.
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Last night, the president of the American Freedom Alliance was honored in Los Angeles as a hero of conscience for her leadership of that important organization and for suffering the consequences of its truth-telling and political incorrectness. In May, Dr. Karen Sigeman's organization hosted a conference on the Long March Through the Institutions. It examined the left's efforts to penetrate and dominate academia, the media, popular culture, and government, institutions that define our society. Dr. Sigeman observed, quote, "Each of us here believes in the unparalleled force for good that is Western civilization. That is our heritage, whether we were born here or not," unquote. The next day, she lost her main job, teaching in an elite high school on the preposterous grounds that defending our civilization is unacceptable. Karen Sigeman is a hero who should be promoted, not punished, for championing Western civilization. This is Frank Gaffney.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Well, Fox has always given me, I'll tell you, Fox is a lot different than it used to be, I can tell you that. Juan Williams, then they have the wonderful woman that gave Hillary Clinton the questions. That was a terrible thing. And all of a sudden, she's working for Fox. What's she doing working for Fox? Fox has changed, and my worst polls have always been from Fox. There's something going on at Fox, I'll tell you right now. And I'm not happy with it. I don't know what's happening with Fox, but when they have like a Juan Williams, who's never said a positive thing, and yet when I show up at the Fox building, he's out there, "Oh, sir, could I have a picture with you? Could I have a picture?" And he was 100% nice. I mean, you've never asked me for a picture.
I have not. Should the Murdochs change the management of Fox, or should they
bring No, they have to run it the way they want to run it. But Fox is different. There's no question about it. And I think they're making a big mistake, because Fox was treated very badly by the Democrats. Very, very badly, having to do with the debates and other things. And I think Fox is making a big mistake because, you know, I'm the one that calls the shots on that, on the really big debates. I guess we're probably planning on three of them. And I'm not happy with Fox. I'm certainly happy. I think Sean Hannity and Lou Dobbs, and I think Tucker Carlson and Laura and Jesse Waters and Janine. We have a lot of great people. Even Greg Gutfeld, he wasn't good to me 2 years ago. Now he sees all I've done. He said, would you rather have a great president or a nice guy? I don't know. I think I'm a nice guy. But nobody's done in 2.5 years what I've done. And I say that a lot, and very few people can challenge it. The first 2.5 years, nobody's done what I've done in terms of tax cuts, regulation cuts, the military, the vets, the choice, so many different things. Nobody's done that. Yeah.
You know, you think that's probably boastful. I know that that's the way we hear it. And he does boast. But he's actually right. All of those things he said were true. In terms of what he's accomplished, it is pretty amazing. And then his comments about Fox are true. You've heard me say that. In fact, somebody wrote me last week and said I was not being honest about Fox's coverage of Hong Kong protests, because they were covering them. And then she said, you're becoming like CNN. So I would just want to rush to say, I was talking about that particular day. There were terrible things happening in Hong Kong, and Fox was not talking about it that morning at all. And I am concerned about them. I've told you before, it's not the first time. I've been saying this to you for a very long time, that when Rupert Murdoch stepped off the scene and handed it over to his sons, they're not the same. They are not. And I know that, I know, because I worked at Fox for a number of years, so I guess maybe I know something about it. And I'm not happy to report that. And I'm with President Trump that a lot of the hosts are great. I really do depend on a lot of them because I do trust them. Many of the ones that he mentioned. And so when they came out with a poll just last week where they showed that the president is behind substantially five of the top Democrat candidates, and it's a registered voters, a little over 1,000 people, and it doesn't say what the breakdown of the voters are. Anytime, you know, what registered voters? Registered to what party? What percentages? You see, it makes a huge difference. And so I maybe they're right. It could be that they're right. Maybe the president is really in real trouble. And some of us are kind of, because we are so concerned about what would happen if the far left takes over the reins of this country, that we don't want to believe this. But it is also true that we need to know more about that poll before we could actually trust it. All right, a big story that happened in the last half of the week, last week, probably Thursday, Friday, was the story about this the Israelis disinviting Rashida Tlaib and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez to come on this visit to Israel, this official visit. And so initially a Democratic delegation was going to go, but then Bibi Netanyahu stepped in and he basically said, let me see, I want to read you exactly his words, because it was pretty, if I could find it, I would read it. Let me just say that Bibi Netanyahu disinvited them. And he said, because they found out that their itineraries showed that they were not visiting Israel. They were going to go visit with pro-Palestinian forces and some terrorist-affiliated organizations. There was nothing on their schedules where they were meeting with Israeli officials or doing anything that was going to be beneficial to Israel. In fact, they were going to be promoting this boycott, divestment, sanction effort, BDS movement. And so he said, you're not welcome. You're not welcome. So Rashida Tlaib then started talking, you know, crying. She actually cried. She said that she wanted to go visit the West Bank to visit her elderly grandmother, and now she was being stopped by the Israeli government, and she was the victim. And so what happened then was Israel approved the visit on humanitarian grounds and said that she could go. In fact, I'll read this. Interior Ministry Derry said Congresswoman Tlaib has sent tonight a letter to Minister Derry, in which she committed to accept all the demands of Israel to respect the restrictions imposed on her in the visit, and she also promised not to advance boycotts against Israel during her visit. But then Tlaib made a big stink about not being able to go and cried. And then they said, all right, you can go on humanitarian grounds if you agree that you will not work against Israel while you're there. And she agreed. And then suddenly she changed her mind and she tweeted this: silencing me and treating me like a criminal is not what she wants for me. That's her grandmother. It would kill a piece of me. I have decided that visiting my grandmother under these oppressive conditions stands against everything I believe, fighting racism, oppression, and injustice. And then she says, when I won, I gave the Palestinian people the hope that someone will finally speak the truth about the inhumane conditions. I can't allow the state of Israel to take away that light by humiliating me and use my love for my city to bow down to their oppressive and racist policies. So that was Rashida Tlaib's response to that. Derry responded by saying, Minister Derry said, I approved her request as a gesture of goodwill on a humanitarian basis, but it was just a provocative request aimed at bashing the state of Israel. Apparently, her hate for Israel overcomes her love for her grandmother. Trey Yangst did a longer piece about this on Fox, and I wanted you to hear it, clip two.
The scheduled and now canceled visit of two U.S. congresswomen to the Middle East has sparked a fiery political debate about the role the United States should play in the Israeli-Palestinian conflict.
Congresswoman Rashida Tlaib has turned down an offer to travel to Israel on a humanitarian visa. Last night, after being denied standard entry to Israel, along with Representative Ilhan Omar, Tlaib signed a letter to the country's interior ministry saying she would not promote a boycott of the Jewish state if she was allowed to visit. This morning, a humanitarian exception was made for the purposes of allowing Tlaib to visit her elderly grandmother in the West Bank. Shortly after the decision, Tlaib tweeted, quote, silencing me and treating me like a criminal is not what she wants for me. It would kill a piece of me. I have decided that visiting my grandmother under these oppressive conditions stands against everything I believe in, fighting against racism, oppression, and injustice. The decision sparked criticism among Republican politicians who said Tlaib was using the ordeal for self-promotion.
Thousands of miles from Washington, D.C., sits the house of Congresswoman Rashida Tlaib's grandmother. This was the location that she was supposed to visit on her trip to the region. While this week has been filled with talk of visas and government travel, her family says the whole ordeal highlights a broader problem for the Palestinian people.
They don't want her to come. They prevent her because they know she's coming here to see in her own eyes with the delegation the suffering of the Palestinian people and the violation of the occupation on the people's lives here.
The congresswoman's grandmother said she was excited for her visit, but supports the decision not to come.
I'm going to prepare for her meat and grape leaves and figs. I hope to see her.
As for a response from the Israelis, the country's interior minister tweeted about Tlaib, saying, quote, apparently her hate for Israel overcomes her love for her grandmother.
All right, so that was Trey Yangst on Fox News. Now, her sweet grandmother that you heard in that clip since then has weighed in because President Trump tweeted this. Representative Tlaib wrote a letter to Israeli officials desperately wanting to visit her grandmother. Permission was quickly granted, whereupon Tlaib obnoxiously turned the approval down, a complete setup. The only real winner here is Tlaib's grandmother. She doesn't have to see her now. That's quintessential President Trump. So Rashida Tlaib's grandmother responds by saying to Reuters, Trump tells me I should be happy Rashida is not coming. May God ruin him. So that's the comment that the grandmother gives. So now that's the kind of the follow-up on that. And then as a follow-up to that, over the weekend, maybe this was yesterday, it was over the weekend sometime, Ilhan Omar and Congresswoman Rashida Tlaib both shared a cartoon. This is a pretty mild description, and I'm going to describe it. Critical of the relationship between President Trump and Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. The cartoon shows Netanyahu covering Tlaib's mouth and Trump covering Omar's. implying the lawmakers are being silenced. As it turns out, the artist behind the image, Carlos Lotuf, has a well-known documented history of anti-Semitism, including finishing second in the 2006 International Holocaust Cartoon Contest hosted by Iran. So Batya Ungar-Sagan, who's the editor of the Jewish Daily Forward, says this, looks like both Representative Omar and Representative Tlaib shared this awful Carlos Lotuf cartoon on in Instagram stories yesterday. And then he goes on to give a little more information. In 2006, Lotuf came in second in Iran's International Holocaust Cartoon Contest, which is a thing that exists in case you thought that it couldn't get any worse. So there's more on this cartoon. I actually saw a picture of it. If I can, again, I've got lots of papers this morning. The cartoon that he won his contest with, I believe this is the one, shows side-by-side pictures of Jews. This is a cartoon images, one trying to get out of a barbed wire fence and one saying, wishing the barbed wire fence were back in place. I can't remember the exact wording, but it's really horrendous. And that's the cartoonist. They didn't post that cartoon, but that's the cartoonist who created the one of President Trump and Benjamin Netanyahu holding their mouths, hands over the mouths of Tlaib and Omar. So Omar shared the image on Instagram, which Tlaib first posted to her Instagram page with a message. The more they try to silence us, our voices rise. The more they try to weaken us, the stronger we become. The more they try to discredit us, the truth prevails. And so that's the response of these women. Now, the House Democrats are responding as well. In fact, they're weighing action against Israel. Senior Democratic members of Congress are said to have launched discussions to formally censure the U.S. ambassador to Israel and Jerusalem's envoy in Washington over Israel's decision to bar entry to Congresswoman Rashida Tlaib and Ilhan Omar. Around a dozen lawmakers, several of whom are Jewish, have begun talks to communicate a, quote, deep lack of confidence and trust, end quote, in Israel's ambassador to the U.S. Ron Dermer and U.S. envoy to Israel David Friedman. According to the report, the Democrats are considering releasing a statement of no confidence in Dermer and opening an inspector general investigation into Friedman. Among those are Elliot Engel, who's the House of Foreign Affairs Committee chairman. Remember, wasn't he the one that Rashida Tlaib disgraced in a committee hearing? Or maybe it was Ilhan Omar, I think it was. And then also House Appropriations Committee Chairwoman Nita Lowey. Both of them are Jewish lawmakers from New York. And they said in their statement, we are reviewing all of our options. With Dermer, the issue is that there already was a severe lack of trust. And on it goes. So that's the story on those women over the weekend. I thought that you would certainly want to know that. Meanwhile, anti-Semitism is rising across the globe. I have so many stories about this every day. I just don't have a chance to tell you, but this one I want to make sure I tell you. The European Union is poised to mandate that Israeli products made in contested territories carry consumer warning labels, a decision that could trigger American anti-boycott laws and open up what legal experts describe as a Pandora's box of litigation. So the European Union is prepared to put, I see the sign. They've got around, you know, like the no entry, the round circle red with the diagonal line over the Star of David. Boycott Israel. It's just, we're in a new day. There's no question about it. Actually, it's an old day, isn't it? Coming back to the way it was, the way it began before the Holocaust. It's just, it's frightening for our Jewish brothers and sisters. And of course, it bleeds over into all people of the book, meaning the Bible. These are the ones that are hated. And that includes those of you and me who embrace Jesus Christ. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.